Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On today's episode of Record, we are talking about Yellowstone's blockbuster season premiere, what it means for live TV versus streaming TV. We're going to give some new data on the holiday shopping numbers that are expected, and they are very large. And we're going to talk about Substack and maybe get into some Web3. That is the buzzword of the month, isn't it, Alex? Web3. Some Web3, maybe Meta. Maybe I'll just put Meta in front of every word we say today on this episode of Record.
Of Record is a podcast focused on the marketing and advertising industry from the perspective of two industry experts. Hosts Matt Farrar and Joe Clements are co-founders of Strategic Digital Services, a digital marketing firm based in Tallahassee, Florida, and founded in 2014.
Hey, everybody. Good to be with you. Guess what? It's just me today, your host, Joe Clements, here in the studio with producer extraordinaire and my co-pilot today, pushing the buttons at the switches with the lights that I don't understand. Alex, say hello, Alex.
Hello.
Did you even make a microphone for yourself, Alex?
I did not.
Yeah, you should have a microphone.
Now I do.
Oh, good job. Because you might have to step in here a little more. This might be your time to shine.
Ooh, lucky me.
Yeah. I know you're more of a behind-the-scenes, quiet character in this, but I might need you to fill in some gaps when I'm reading and doing catch-up here. So let's get started with what I think is the most interesting story in media from the last couple weeks, and it has been a couple weeks since we recorded this podcast. We've had a lot of road shows here at the company, a lot of production items, some crazy stuff going on, recording woodpeckers at night, and elk and buffaloes and all kinds of crazy things underwater and in the air. But I am back and we are in studio. And so we are going to talk about Yellowstone season four premiere. This deadline draws massive 8 million viewers, sets 2021 demo highs on television. So, Alex, have you watched Yellowstone?
I have not.
Oh, well, you need to go home and watch all three seasons and two episodes right now.
Come on.
Okay, so background here, Yellowstone is a neo-Western by Taylor Sheridan. Taylor Sheridan, responsible for other neo-Western movies, Sicario, Hell or High Water, Wind River are some of the big ones. I think he's probably the best neo-Western writer working today in Hollywood. His adaptation of Those Who Wish Me Dead, a very good neo-Western book, was not well done. I did not like it, but I love Yellowstone. And as you know, the Western is a genre that is vaunted in Hollywood. It hasn't been a big deal in our lifetimes until very recently. But in our grandparents' day, and maybe our great-grandparents' day, the Western was it. You know, John Wayne was the big man, and he was in Westerns, and there were spaghetti Westerns. And Americans had a love affair with the idea of the Western. And I think that is coming back, and that's partially what explains the fascination with Yellowstone. So another thing that I think ties into Yellowstone, and I think I've said this on the podcast before, if you cut our grandparents loose and said they could live anywhere they wanted, they would move to Florida. They would move to the beach, right? Which is why Florida grows and continues to grow. When you cut a millennial or a Gen Zer loose, they want to go buy $400 lightweight Patagonia jackets, and they want to live in the West. They want to live in Bozeman or Salt Lake City or Denver or Boulder. That's the lifestyle that appeals to millennials and Gen Zers more and more. And so I believe this show taps into that while still keeping an older audience that may remember the tail end of the Western days on TV engaged. So it set an 8 million viewer record, and that's live and same-day streaming. That's up 100% from last year. And what makes this notable is that actually beats Game of Thrones season 4 premiere. Now, not the series finale, but Game of Thrones season 4 premiere. What makes this even more remarkable to me is what disaster CBS Viacom's licensing rights are for this show. This show is all over the place and nowhere all at the same time. So you might expect that this being a CBS Viacom product would be available on CBS's flagship streaming service, Paramount Plus. You would be wrong. It is in fact not on there, and neither are any of the prior seasons. Prior seasons are available on Peacock. CBS Viacom licensed it to NBC. The current season is available to watch live on Paramount Network or the Paramount Network app, requiring a cable subscription. And there's also, you can watch it on the CMT, the country music station, or TV Land, or the other places you can watch it. So as I said, this show's distribution is a complete and utter disaster, and even hardcore fans of the show weren't able to figure out immediately how to watch it either live or streaming. So the fact that 8 million people work their way through the licensing disaster that is this show shows you how popular it is. So what does this mean for advertisers? What does this mean for television? Here's what I think this means. Event-based TV is still a big deal. So usually we think of event-based TV as a sporting event, or, you know, in the old times, the before times, as maybe an award show, where you could build a marketing campaign around the launch of the sporting event or around the award show or whatever it is. I think what happens with these big network TV dramas is if they can achieve some sort of gravity, you know, think back to maybe the heyday of Walking Dead, a marketer can really build a campaign around it, and the studio or the network promoting it can draw an audience because it becomes one of those touchstones that can be talked about culturally across demographics, across age groups, in the way all event-based TV does. It's something people will talk about over and over again. It's also really serially, so it's released only once a week, so people have time to catch up. So I think what this means for TV is if you have one of these home runs on your hands, you can get a big audience even still in today's streaming world. If you're a marketer, it means you want to tap into this by building marketing campaigns around the theme of the show or the event. So if it's football, you'd build a marketing campaign around football. If it is Yellowstone, you might build a marketing campaign around, you know, Western looks or the Old West or things like that. So that is the primary boil down that I take away from this. I will be interested to see if this series sustains this viewership throughout the season and the way Game of Thrones was able to do in its heyday, especially in that last season. But we will see. I am actually surprised that the show has gotten more and more popular as time has gone on, given that I think the best season was probably the first season, still my opinion. But we'll see what happens to it. So that is the update on Yellowstone and what it means for television. So let's move on to another story that I saw pop up today, which is a story about Substack. Do you know what Substack is, Alex?
Sounds familiar, but you'd have to give me an explanation.
So Substack, let's say you are a notable writer at a newspaper and you get canceled. So maybe you're a Matt Taibbi from Rolling Stone, or you're an Alex Berenson, or you're a Barry Weissman, the New York Times editorial writer. I can't remember her last name. And you have an audience. You could move to Substack, start publishing on Substack, and monetize your audience. And so they can pay you a subscription fee per month, and Substack handles the email distribution for you, handles the posting, handles the transactions. So it basically makes the process of going from being an independent writer, being crowd-supported, much simpler. It's a one-step process. And it has been it has been very successful. It's up to 1 million paid subscribers, and it sets a lot of cultural norms, or not cultural norms, it sets a lot of cultural standards and controversy in the media right now. Some of the edgiest writers are writing on Substack and have very large followings, and they're doing really well because they're able to parlay the names they've built working for legacy media institutions and then monetize those on Substack, where they're relatively free from like censorship or cultural pressures, things like that. So there's a lot of interesting things on there. Now, what they're doing that I thought was interesting is they are setting up to offer insurance premiums to their writers, or insurance premiums, insurance policies to their writers, and some other basic retirement plans, so that when you're on there, it's more of a collective. So, you know what's interesting, according to Substack, by the way, the top 10 publications garner more than $20 million per year. So it is a big business for some handful of influential writers. So I want to look at Substack for a specific reason. I think Substack is really telling about what's coming for Web3 and how Web3 looks. I would say this is a proto Web3 application or a network, and here's why. So if you go back, what was it, 2 weeks ago, Alex, I did the Facebook primer before the episode. You guys did the Peasants podcast.
Maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Two or three weeks. It's been a second. So Web3 is an amorphous term. I'm going to use it here to describe a way the internet works without having a centralized service sitting in the middle between the content creator and the content consumer. And that centralized service tends to act as a middleman that takes the biggest cut of the revenue coming through. So think Facebook, think Google, think YouTube, think things like those. Now, Substack is still a company. Substack is still sitting in the middle between the subscriber who's paying money and the writer who's creating content. But what you can see from Substack, and you can see this a little bit in Patreon as well, is if a content creator is creating good enough and interesting enough content, they can monetize and make a lot of money directly from a relatively small number of people. And Substack is demonstrating that this can be done for writers that would have previously been writing books or cover articles for magazines or front page stories for newspapers. What I think the other tie-in is here is I don't think Substack as a company actually has to be involved in this at all. I think what's coming with Web3 is there will be a version of Substack that works by transacting on some sort of cryptocurrency. It'll probably be Ethereum or something similar that allows people to transact directly for the stories they're reading with the author they're following, and then also allow authors to issue NFTs for a percentage of the revenues they earn on their readers for a certain story or a certain series to their biggest fans. So a writer can essentially issue the NFT, front load the revenue they get, and then that NFT entitles the buyer to a share of revenues that author makes in the future. So what you're doing is you are decentralizing publishing, because publishing works like this. Let's say, Alex, you want to write a book. What's your book called?
Being Alex.
Being Alex. And I'm the publisher. I run Joe Publishing. And so you're going to come to me. You're going to pitch me on your book, Alex. And I'm going to say, Alex, that sounds like an interesting book. I think I have a market for it that will buy this book. I think we can book you on podcast to promote it. I'll pay you $250,000.
Ooh.
Yep. And then you get $250,000, and it's probably spaced a little bit up front, a little bit on delivery, a little bit 6 months later. But then once I pay that $250,000, I own the book rights. So if that book goes global, if that book is a bestseller, I get all of the monies for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So what will happen, I think, when Web3 comes on and future versions that do what Substack is doing, is there won't be me as a publisher. There will be you as a writer, and you're going to have fans, and you're going to say, hey, I'm going to work on a series of posts all about what should your post be about?
About
being Alex.
Yeah, being Alex.
Post about being Alex. And it's going to be a 20-part series. My historic performance on each thing I post is I make $2,000 on each article I post from readers coming through, and I want to issue NFTs in, you know, 1% blocks or 2% blocks, and you pay me X amount of money, and then you'll be entitled to that percentage of revenues that come in from people consuming this content, right? And so you've taken me out as the publisher. Now you can front load your piece, and you issue the NFT, and me as your fan, I can make a few points on what you're selling. That incentivizes me to promote it, to share with my friends, to get them to read. And so we've cut out the middleman. You as a writer get the profits that you want. Maybe it's all, maybe it's just front loaded. And me as the fan, I can actually share in the ownership of your product, or in the ownership of the rights to your product, which makes me highly invested in what you're doing. So I think that's what this Web3 thing is going to look like. I think we're seeing the shadow of that, the early phases of that in Substack right now.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to bring up Substack.
Cool.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, that makes
sense. Always, when I go into these speculative things, I'm never sure if it makes sense to anybody but me. But the important thing to know here is this is why the crypto stuff, the blockchain stuff, goes so far beyond just like the trading the currency and trying to become like a Bitcoin billionaire. It's a new form of computing. It's a new technology that enables new ways of doing business and distributing content, which is going to be a big deal for content creators and fans of content going forward. What time were we at, Alex?
We are at 17 minutes.
You know, I forget when I just do this on my own, how much talking you have to do to fill 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It's quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Alex, have you ever heard of the Cyber Five?
No, I have not.
When I say that, what would you think the Cyber Five is?
Some kind of cyborg superhero group.
Yeah, that would be probably cooler than what it is. What it actually is, it refers to the days between Thanksgiving and Cyber Monday. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to tell you the names of those days? Because they all have names now.
Is it just Cyber Monday, Cyber Tuesday?
Well, it's Thanksgiving Day.
Huh.
Yeah, otherwise known as Thanksgiving Day.
Sure.
Black Friday. Mm-hmm. Small Business Saturday. Cyber Sunday,
okay,
and Cyber Monday.
Hmm.
So those are the Cyber Five days. And traditionally what happens is and this is out of eMarketer, by the way, retail e-commerce sales by shopping day for 2021, it's expected that the biggest of those days, what do you think would be the biggest of those days for cyber shopping?
Cyber Monday.
Cyber Monday at 12%. Of total cyber sales. What do you think would be the second biggest?
Black Friday.
Black Friday and the third?
Cyber Tuesday?
Cyber Sunday?
Cyber Sunday.
It's actually Thanksgiving.
Interesting.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense to me because people are, it's called couch commerce. So they're just sitting there post-Thanksgiving, just buying stuff on their phone, wasting time.
Shopping and avoiding talking to family.
Yeah, avoiding talk or, you know, getting gift ideas and just ordering it right there. So online sales expected to increase 15% during the Big Five this year. That's a massive retail increase. And what I wanted to go over leading into that is we talked a few weeks ago about the projections for this year's holiday shopping season. And so I wanted to go through eMarketer's official shopping holiday shopping 2021 forecast here. So retail sales to rise 9% to just over $1.14 trillion. You might not remember this, Alex, but I'm a little older than you. I remember when $1 trillion is a lot of money. Mm. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I think it's
you remember
is,
when
right?
$1 trillion? No, it's not a lot of money. We just trillions. Yeah, it doesn't even matter. Okay. It cost me $7 billion to get a hamburger yesterday, for example.
I believe it.
Yeah, at the airport. So this is an interesting one. U.S. brick and mortar retail will surge 7.9% to $935 billion, while e-commerce will climb 14.4% to $211 billion, with e-commerce accounting for 18.4% of total sales. What's notable about that to me is, man, is this an episode about the return of traditional things? We had Yellowstone on TV, and now we have in-store brick and mortar retail just roaring back. And we talked about this on the last episode. It's because it's easier to shop in person. Like in person, you can look at things and pull down stuff that's like interesting and maybe it jogs your memory.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Especially true for clothes. So it's just like easier to shop there. And if you click on Amazon and Amazon's like, this will arrive in 17 weeks. Well, Christmas is like less than 17 soon. Weeks away now.
Yeah.
So you can't wait that long, you know, to order the off-brand phone charger. You have to go to the store and buy it. And so in some ways, I think the supply chain stuff is really helping in-store retail sales, which, by the way, overall this year, again, up 9%. Last year, they were up 6.2%. To give an idea of how big of a jump that is from prior years, 2015, it was only up 2%, 2016, 4%, 2017, 4.8%, 2018, 1.5%. So having jumps of 6 and 9% is massive in retail terms, because it's not like Christmas and the holidays is like a growing trend, right? It's been around for 100 years. Like, it's a mature market, and to add 10% year over year is stunning. Now, I'll give it this. That is only in real dollar figures. That does not account for the inflation, which is probably actually in excess of 10% and could explain a lot of the growth going on in that spending space, as people are spending more to get roughly the same amount. I would be curious to see if there's any research on the total number of gifts or anything like that people are planning to buy. So, of course, last year, retail e-commerce was up big, up 32% last year. So it's building off that base at, you know, another 14.4%. Biggest store opening. And by the way, this kind of runs counter to me to the fact that people feel wealthier and are spending more money. Alex, what would you guess are the stores with the most openings this year between January and September? Most new stores open.
Oh, most new stores.
Most new stores.
So I'm assuming it's not one of the big super stores like Walmart, Target.
Nope.
Mom and pop?
Just chain stores. Most new stores. So think, you know, they have to have opened at least 100 stores.
Probably like a clothing store?
No.
No?
No. It is Dollar General, Dollar Tree, Murphy USA. So that's Walmart's convenience store. And Family Dollar are the top four.
Interesting.
So, you know, Audi, Burlington Coat Factory, and Five Below are on there as well. What this suggests to me, and by the way, I'm sorry, that is store openings versus store closing. So that is net store growth. This suggests to me that a lot of the growth in spending is actually happening in the down market space, not in the up market space. So the up market space may be stable. So the malls now may be stable. The big department stores may be stable. But the growth is actually happening even below the Walmart and the Target level of retail. The growth is happening in the deeply discounted part of retail. And this, you know, is interesting because with incomes rising, you wouldn't necessarily expect to see that. But then also, you may have consumers subbing down because of inflation. So if their income is relatively the same, but they're paying more money, they may be moving down from, say, a Kroger or a Publix to an Aldi. And I don't mean to say Aldi is down, but it is usually less expensive than a Kroger or a Publix or a main, you know, one of the big shopping market chains. I know there's a lot of Aldi fans, a lot of Trader Joe's fans. I didn't mean to insult you, but it is generally considered to be a lower cost, leaner experience than a Publix or a Kroger. Foot Locker is actually in there as well. One of the biggest net openers. They're also one of the biggest net closers, which is kind of funny. So discount stores dominating, and then, you know, beauty and apparel. So Sephora, Ulta, Old Navy, Nike, Lululemon, Athletica, you know, they're opening stores, but not at the rate that the discounters are opening stores.
Yeah.
Taking a pause here. What you're hearing me do when I'm pausing is there's no one else to jump in and fill the void. You're never supposed to leave silent. So it's me like trying. These are very long reports. I'm trying to scroll down to the next piece. So I think one of the other items I wanted to go over here is when people are sharded. I'm having a lot of like verbal things today that are kind of funny. What do you call that when you accidentally say something, but it's like a suppressed truth?
Is it not like a brain fart?
No, there's a word for it. There's a like a lapse of Freudian slip. Yeah. Maybe I really need to go to the bathroom right now. So most adults expect to have started shopping before the end of October. That's 31%. And if you include the other 24%, over half of people expect to have started shopping before Thanksgiving, which is notable because what I think that does is actually drive down those numbers for the Cyber Five. There's one other thing in here I wanted to cover, which is categories of sales, like what are the biggest searches on Amazon, which are considered like an indicator of what people are interested in looking for.
Not a PS5 or Xbox One?
Well, just all like top Amazon search terms from January 1st to July 29th, most recent time period, which data is available.
Probably tech, toys, clothing.
What do you think is the number one product?
Product, not just like category?
Yeah, product.
Like an iPhone?
It is an iPhone.
Okay,
yep. Cool. The iPhone and its average ranking in that time is like it's 4.5. So it's in the top five of all the time. The second most is a Pop-It. So like a fidget thing.
Okay.
I guess a lot of fidget toys are going to be under.
It's big.
You know, I've had some travel in the last few weeks and just popped in gift shops like looking for stuff for my daughter. You know, another thing, one other item I've seen in retail coming back is the toy store. The toy store / gift shop, especially in towns that have a boutique scene to them. I've seen a lot of toy stores.
I could see that.
Yeah, it's, you know, big Lego collections, but a wall of these like fidget things, which I guess is better than just medicating kids for ADD. You just give them these like little puppy toys,
yeah,
I guess.
Fidget toys.
Yeah. Number three is Bluetooth headphones. Number four, earbuds. Number five, iPhone 11 case. Number six, desk. Fidget toys, seven, PS5 coming in at number eight. Gaming chair was high up there too. Average rank of 20. And then car accessories at 26. So I think this is a good indicator of like what are kind of the miscellaneous things you're going to get that aren't on your list, but people buy you are going to be, which tend to actually be big sales items because it's what retailers will put front and center for you to buy for a long time. And I think we're moving into like the wireless headphones right now, but for a long time, it was like the Bluetooth speaker. Like if you went into any retailer, they had a thing of Bluetooth speakers, like buy your Bluetooth speaker now. But I think Alexa has become so pervasive, the Echo, that people aren't necessarily in the market for Bluetooth speakers anymore, unless they're at the high end for a Sonos or something like that.
Yeah, I think
just so like too. Everybody has a Bluetooth speaker now. Any gifts that are coming to your mind that you think are going to be interesting?
Not ones that people can easily get.
Well, what are they?
Well, for me, I'm personally interested in the PS5, but nobody can find those these days.
Yeah, I mean, they're searching for it on Amazon, but they're not getting it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, PS5 looks like toys might be. One of the things I'll do when I'm shopping is I'll go walk into other sections of a store. So I was in a couple of Walmarts traveling, had to pick up random items. I did notice the toy items were pretty hard hit already. And we're 2 weeks out from Thanksgiving, 3 weeks out from Thanksgiving, and there were already some depleted shelves. You know, it's kind of funny. I've seen more depleted store shelves in the last year and a half than I have in my entire life across every genre of item. But toys were pretty hard hit already. So that may be something that's coming true is the toy shortage. So top digital retailers, Alex, you want to take a guess? This is an easy one.
Digital retailers.
ByVisitors.
ByVisitors?
Yeah.
Never heard of that. Oh, ByVisitors.
Yeah. By the number of people who visit the site. The number one is real easy, man.
Is it not like...
They own an airport.
They own
they own trucks. They have planes.
Amazon. There you go.
Number two, Walmart. Three, eBay. Oh, okay. Four, Apple. Five, Etsy. Six, Target. Seven and eight, Home Depot, Lowe's. I did not realize that they would be on there for retail. But I think this is the click and pick up where you can order it online and then pick it up at the store, which I do think is a game changer for those stores because the in-store experience at a Lowe's or a Home Depot is a nightmare. I hate wandering around. Like, you just wander around, can't find anything, just like 9,000 different types of screws. Just having someone else pick it out for you is a big deal. Number 10, Wayfair. So, you know, the big thing that I'm seeing reported is like, don't count on promotions this year. Just like forget about that. You know, deals are going to be hard to come by. The search and sponsored product ads across Amazon, Google, expected to be very competitive with prices up maybe double or triple from last year. We've actually seen costs go down on Facebook over the last month. Interestingly enough, it seemed to have spiked in October and is letting off a little bit right now for the, you know, for the client niches we're in.
Yep.
The one that's expected to have a hard time is social because of the iOS 14.5 changes, not being able to do really strong attribution. And so what's happening on social is instead of direct sales, moving more into branding top of funnel stuff on social. So the past 5 or 6 years have been, man, you go on Instagram, what were you seeing? Like all kinds of random things, right? You're just getting pitched. Like, so you're going to see less and less stuff designed to get you to buy right now and more things just designed to introduce you to the product and then retarget you in other ways. So using social media is more the top of funnel piece. So I think that kind of summarizes pretty well what I see going on. A lot of online shopping. Another notable thing, Thanksgiving Day shopping looks to be in person, looks to be a thing of the past. And I am glad that's over. I think opening stores on Thanksgiving was an abomination.
Yeah, it was always a cluster and you never end up finding what you wanted.
Yeah, and people weren't asking to go shopping on Thanksgiving. Those retail employees certainly weren't asking. I mean, my brother for a long time worked at Best Buy and he said, actually, no, people wanted to work on Thanksgiving sometimes because you could get a holiday pay or it was bit like, but for the most part, I don't think people wanted to be working on a holiday in retail. So I think it's better that those stores are closed. Kudos to REI for being one of the first people to buck the trend. I mean, I think they actually may have closed on that Friday too. Some days, like the Get Outside Friday or what. This promotion is 4 or 5 years old now. Anything else you think we should cover, Alex? Google's telling people that Congress may be breaking up their business and that's bad for Google Ads, which I think is probably true. I got a notification to that today on Google.
I think we covered a lot.
Yeah. You know, one other thing I did see is streaming music. I keep saying, don't I? It's funny, the listeners can't see this, but there's a picture of a bear and a microphone or a studio, and it says, only you can prevent filler words. Did you catch the irony of how I just presented that?
Yep.
Yeah, that's funny. I think we should actually print that where it said, only you can prevent filler words. Spotify has extended its lead in the music streaming wars. So what I'm looking at here is a line graph over time from 2015 to present, which shows that Spotify is just crushing everybody else in music streaming listeners at 165 million. Number two is Apple at closing in on 70 million. Three is Amazon Music, which is very close. And four continues to be YouTube Music at about 30 million people. I think YouTube's underestimated by a lot of marketers for how much music streaming happens on that platform. So if you look at the age ranges on these streaming services, what do you think Spotify does well with, Alex?
Younger demographic.
Yep. So 15 to 44, loving themselves on Spotify. Mm-hmm. Almost no one over 60 is on it, only 8.4%. What about YouTube Music?
Probably that millennial to Gen X.
What is interesting is it does go up to Gen X, but Gen Z is big on it too. So 33% of Gen Zers, 37% of millennials, 27% of Gen Xers, and 14% of 60 plus. Apple Music, again, heavy in the lower age ranges. Pandora, more popular with millennials and Gen Zers, a little more popular, 60 plus. FM radio, very small amounts of 15 to 29, big portion of 60 plus, which I thought was notable there. So I have some thoughts on the music streaming space, the audio space in general. I think it is only starting now to mature. And we've talked about this in this podcast multiple times. I think iHeartMedia's acquisition of Spreaker is a big deal because what this has set up is a marketplace that can be ad supported in two ways. So one on Spotify. Spotify is still in their beta with their programmatic podcast ad buying. So that, and then if you're not on Spotify, going the Spreaker route through iHeartMedia, I think is going to be, is going to mature that space so that buying ads on podcasts starts to look and feel a lot more like buying ads on Facebook or Google or anything programmatic used to do. I think we're going to start to see that commonplace by the middle of next year. I think when Spotify rolls out their self-serve to everybody, I think iHeart will be maybe a quarter or two behind, and that's going to be off to the races for audio. I think the audience is there. It's basically fully mature in terms of consumers. You can reach people on those platforms. You can target them fairly directly. It is a good ad product for the most part, I find, audio. So I think that's what we're going to see there. And you can't underestimate, I think, what Amazon's about to do in the media and advertising space. So Amazon hasn't really clicked on its ad buying piece yet. You can buy ads on the Amazon platform. Amazon recently did a deal where you can retarget off Amazon. I forget who their partner was for their programmatic advertising. But remember, Amazon at any moment can kick on the Amazon Prime TV ads, and it can kick on the Amazon Music ads to have an audio feature. So Amazon is just waiting in the wings to, I think, be the biggest advertising juggernaut. They just haven't done it yet. They're still building. I don't know when they're going to turn it on, but when they turn it on, it's going to be a default. It's going to be default a I think when they turn it on, it will be the second or third largest advertiser in the world. It'll be somewhere behind Facebook and Google. It'll probably be Google, Facebook, Insta, and then Amazon. TikTok will be somewhere in there. You know, TikTok had a big, it's at a billion users now. It's the fastest to do it, did it in 33 quarters. So TikTok's going to be in there at some point. I think TikTok is going to be more limited than Amazon because it only has that one form factor. Mm-hmm. So far, it just has the vertical video piece. But I think the audio component for Amazon, coupled with the video component, coupled with the fact that they know your shopping history, is going to be a behemoth of an ad business that's going to make what Facebook and Google have done so far, if you're trying to sell a product, look like a children's product when Amazon turns that on. Hmm. All right. Anything else? Oh, you didn't play the Jeffrey Bezos stinger. Hit me with Jeffrey Bezos stinger. Thank you.
There you go.
Yeah. We have the stinger, but we're going to get better at using it.
Yeah, we will.
All right. So if you like the show, leave us a review. Tell a friend. That always helps get better distribution. Sorry we haven't been with you for a few weeks, but I am back in the office now. So we will be back on a schedule of once a week for a podcast. And maybe next time, if you're lucky, we'll have some of the other co-hosts. Unless you don't like them, then leave a comment. Say you don't like them, and I'll just do monologues on my own again. Just me and Alex in here. Yep. Pilot and co-pilot. Flying this podcast straight into a black hole. All right. We appreciate it, listeners. Hope you have a great week. And we will hear you. We don't really hear you. We don't really see you next time. But figuratively, we will be present in your ears next time. Thank you.
Of Record is hosted and produced by me, Matt Farrar, Joe Clements, and Rebecca Romero, with producer Alex Reinhardt. Of Record is recorded at Graybridge Studios in Tallahassee, Florida. This episode was edited by Alex Reinhardt. Our theme music is composed and performed by Rob Goki. Special thanks to our entire team at SDS here in Tallahassee. You can see more information about the show at our website, podcastofrecord.com. As always, we'd appreciate your reviews and ratings in your podcast app of choice. Those ratings and reviews help more people discover the show, which helps us keep delivering quality content each week. Thanks for listening.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.